Welcome to Flustercuck, the bad movie podcast featuring myself and my dear colleagues Alex and Tom. Say hello.
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 Yeah, I'm sure the nice boys and girls will very much appreciate your contribution.
So
Tom, what have you got for us this week?
Well, we're here, and I'm going to get you guys to review the delightful film Freddy Got Fingered.
Gee, really? For true?
For me?
And I've got a couple of questions planned for you. I'm going to pitch one against the other. And the best thing is, obviously, neither of you know whether you're going to be arguing the good or bad. And in the meantime, I've been thinking of ways to raise money for the podcast so that we can become rich web celebrities. And I would like to start selling Star Wars spoilers, but perhaps start selling them like a different spoiler to each website, because if you throw enough darts at a dartboard, eventually one's going to stick, and then all of a sudden we're an inside source.
It's true. You just need it's like applying for a job and finding the clitoris. You just need to hit it once.
Exactly. Yeah. And then you're set for life, really. That is my scheme. I will develop it more over the course of the podcast, I hope, because it's quite a fresh idea.
It is. I'm excited already.
But you know, I'm thinking developing. Obviously, we start with Star Wars because it's so fresh in everyone's mind, and then maybe we move on to bigger, better sort of franchises. But perhaps move on to Avatar. Not The Last Airbender. Avatar is in the blue Pocahontas. Because, I mean, like, that's been coming and going now for, well, longer than...
I like the idea that of the Star Wars one. Because I did hear from a friend who works on the inside, that Yoda's ghost gets kidnapped.
Oh, whoa. See, now that's interesting, because I know a guy who actually lives with one of the guys that's involved. Mm-hmm. They said that Qui-Gon Jinn is going to turn up and he's going to be a Sith Lord, so, you know.
I can see that. I think that would work for him.
I could say, will he have a bit where he appears on like a little holo recording saying, you know, to the nasty rebels, whoever you are, I will find you, and make a taken reference.
I sincerely hope so.
I could totally believe that, just with his career trajectory of how he's become this kind of
he's
gone from sort of what you consider sort of like a fairly sort of like a high B, almost A grade act, sort of classic actor, to this kind of this weird sort of Bruce Willis new tough man, this older tough man role.
It is.
But I mean, this is what I'm saying. They can't be like far fetched rumors. They've got to be like, they've got to have an element of truth in them. So Yoda's ghost,
just believable enough, BuzzFeed.
Yeah, no, absolutely, yeah. Just enough to get the top of the article on BuzzFeed.
I think you've hit on something. You know, like, you know, you start with Star Wars, but I think maybe you should like branch out to Disney, because that encompasses like Marvel as well.
Oh yeah,
and
no,
I think
no,
if
no,
you become like a dedicated source, you could really, you know, we could really, see some cashola in the bank.
There'll be an awesome mix number three in there somewhere.
Oh no, definitely, yeah. But this is what I'm saying. So you start with Star Wars because you can, with Star Wars, there are so many rumors flying around. Eventually you throw enough dartboards, as I say, one's going to stick. And when you get your foot in the door.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, if you manage to hit big with something like Star Wars, that's eternal credibility right there.
Yeah.
See, now, I'm thinking with the awesome mix number three, it's Star-Lord's mother, as obviously she's died, but turns out that, you know, she was quite connected to the Force. So she's coming back as sort of a Force ghost, but all the only message people are getting, some of the lyrics to, say, what's the song that wasn't in that film?
Anything from the 90s.
Yes, a 90s.
That's the one decade they left out.
Lyrics from a 90s song.
When Two Become One by Spice Girls.
When Two Become One. That message is from that song keep floating around the Star Wars galaxy. And they're like, what's going on? What do these words mean? These secret words that are coming from the Force. And it's not until Star-Lord shows up with the other Guardians that they're like, oh, hey, guess what? That means 90s.
Well, it's great because, you know, if with, like you said, if they're doing the 90s thing, then you can maybe branch out, because obviously they've got a fairly sort of, you know, diverse central cast. And so I'm thinking, you know, like, if it is about, like, Star-Lord's mother, you know, maybe she'll be recast as, like, you know, as an African-American actress or something. And then you could have that song that Bastille covered, you know, the one that goes, what would you do if someone's at home crying all alone on the bedroom floor? And that's about motherhood. So that's nice.
I think there's some credibility in that.
Yeah.
I think, in fact, you know what? I'm going to make a few phone calls. I think we can get that on BuzzFeed tonight.
Good stuff.
Excellent.
So you both watched Freddy Got Fingered?
Yes.
That is a film watch.
Yeah, okay.
Because of you.
And you're both aware that you one of you is going to have to fight the good fight here, and one of you is going to have to essentially get raped in the corner. Yeah?
These are all the facts we're aware of.
And okay. I like that you're already setting the tone for what to expect from Freddy Got Fingered there with the
Oh yeah. Comment. Oh yeah. So in my hand I have a coin. It's a normal pound coin, heads and tails. I'm gonna flip it. And eeny meeny miny mo, Sam, you're gonna get to choose heads or tails. Jackal.
No, I'm usually such a tails man. I'll go for heads.
Okay, heads. You get to decide who, you know, which one you wanna go with. It is tails.
So does that mean Alex gets to decide?
Yes, Alex. Would you like to choose the good fight or the bad fight?
Well, I'm sorry, Sam, but I've had to spend many a podcast defending bad movies. So it's going to be nice just for once, for this first time, to be able to rip a film a new one.
Don't worry, Sam, because you can still win this, and then you get to choose the films that Alex and I watch this week.
It's okay, it's fine. I actually, I did take this eventuality, and I managed to find a good quality about this film.
Okay.
Like a genuine good point, not some sort of sarcastic.
Well, good point isn't allowed to be that Drew Barrymore's in it.
See, that wasn't going to be. Well, that, actually, yeah, I could have said, oh, there's some fun cameos. Which is true.
What you've got to remember though is Drew Barrymore was like married to him at that point as well. So
it's,
I mean,
true. So it is a good point, but tinged with some sad.
That would explain the part in the credits where they randomly start making out.
Yeah.
I didn't watch that. Fuck.
You didn't watch the whole credits? Oh.
I checked out. I apologize.
I'm not surprised that you checked out because this is a fucking awful film.
So bad. There are some redeeming features.
I'll have to share with you.
Before the arguments really, really kick off, and I am looking forward to them, Sam, would you like to tell us what the film is about? Remember, you're not allowed to say anything bad.
Okay, so, so Freddy Got Fingered is a, it was the first film written and especially, I believe, directed as well by, late 90s, early 2000s comedian Tom Green, who is, you know, known for his very, very, ADD influenced
loud comedy.
Very loud, very fast paced, very energetic, very up. He's a very up comedian. He's very much a comedian that will be on his feet, as it were. And so the plot is, and it's kind of semi autobiographical, but kind of metaphorical as well. And it's basically about this guy called Gordo, who is a 28, 29 year old, you know, slacker who lives at home with his parents, and his younger brother, played by the chubby nerd from NCIS. His father is Rip Torn, and his mother is an actress, and he's a, you know, he's a young guy with a dream, and the dream is basically he wants to be an animator and he wants to be a cartoonist, and he has this goal of getting to Hollywood and pitching and successfully selling one of his, you know, one of his ideas to a TV executive. So at the beginning of the film, he's you know, it's kind of today's the day, and he's at the beginning of the film, and he's skateboarding, you know, through the mall to get to this Greyhound bus where he's going to be going off to Hollywood because he's got a new job working in a cheese sandwich factory, and he's also going to try and shop his cartoons around to people, and his parents are there, Rip Torn and the actress are there, as well as the nerd from NCIS are there, and they're all you know, they're proud, and you know, Rip Torn is proud of him, and they're seeing him off, and then he's about to get on the bus, and his father goes, no, you're not getting on that bus to Hollywood. He gets off, and he's like, what? But you bought me my ticket. And they said, you know, that's not the only thing we bought, and they give him a car. Turns out they've bought him a car so he can go off, and then, you know, they're proud of him, and they want him to do well, and they want him
what
to make
a waste of the cost
good.
Of a ticket.
I know, well, you know, it's a gift. It was an interesting and so he goes off to Hollywood from Utah or the Portland, from Portland, and apparently apparently the drive to, you know, Portland to Hollywood is to LA. I didn't realize it was that short. Who knew? I always imagined they were quite far away, but apparently not. So, you know, you got to learn something about American geography there. That's always fun. And he gets into a few wacky hijinks along the way. Thankfully, it doesn't get bogged down being like a road movie, and it's very much a case of, no, he you know, within the first 8 minutes, he's in Hollywood, and he pitches it to her. He finds a producer who's, you know, big, who could potentially, you know, give him the opportunity of a lifetime, and he pitches it to him. The guy turns him down, basically says that his stuff has potential, but it's not great, and he needs to go away, think about it, and actually sort of, you know, really get into the characters and put some time and effort into it. And so he does, you know, and there's some comedy about suicide and about blowing your brains out, and a few other bit of, you know, some madcap comedy as well as, like, you know, like I said before, there's a few fun little cameos, people like Drew Barrymore and the like, who was married to him, so that's always good. It's always nice when couples can work together on a project. Just look at J-Lo and Affleck. That was good. And so eventually he goes away, and he meets this girl who is at a hospital. Well, there's some more wacky hijinks happen at the hospital, but whilst he's also there, he meets this young girl who is he's interested in. She's interested in him. She's in a wheelchair, but she's a rocket scientist. So basically, her dream is to build like a rocket-powered wheelchair. And so they enter into this kind of cute. Sort of playful, semi-sexual relationship, and so he's got that going for him. Unfortunately, obviously, it didn't pan out, and he basically the producer tells him to quit his job at the cheese sandwich factory and really focus on, you know, working hard to become the animator he wants to be. So he goes back home, and Rip Torn is a bit disappointed, and essentially, it kind of, from there, Rip Torn isn't happy that his son's come home because he had such high hopes for him, and his son, well, you know, just is not achieving those goals, and so the tension sort of escalates between them, and there's a big chunk of the film is kind of there back and forth, and, you know, again, sort of the tension escalating between them, and, you know, there's some stuff with his friends, and Rip Torn, you know, drives, him and his friend have been spending years building this half pipe in the garage, and Rip Torn gets angry, and so he drives out into the street, destroys it, and then, you know, there's some fun sort of hijinks with Tom Green trying to impress his new girlfriend, and Rip Torn again just sort of kind of comes in and kind of ruins that because he's just, you know, he's not really feeling that proud of his son. And it ends up on a high note because eventually, through various misdemeanors, he manages to find the producer, and he basically manages to pitch a new show to him about these, called Zebras in America, which is about these half zebra centaurs who moved from Africa, and the father character is inspired by his own father's accent. And of course, at first the guy doesn't really believe him and thinks, oh, you know, this is not believable, no one acts like this. And then Rip Torn comes in, trashes the guy's office, and acts like a massive jerk. And the guy thinks, oh my god, this is amazing, this is so funny, I will just like in real Hollywood, I will buy this on the spot. And right there on the spot, gives Gordo a check for $1 million, and he fulfills his dreams, and so Gordo becomes this massive success, and then he gets to, you know, sort of, you know, declare his love for his girlfriend and buy her spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on jewels, which she doesn't actually want, she just wants to spend time with him, which is
and
nice.
you do think that that's where the film would end.
You would think that, but then no. But then, you know, obviously, it being Tom, you know, Green being such an offbeat, off the wall kind of guy, he doesn't end it there. He goes, okay, because he does what's in, what is in comedy known as a callback, which is whereby you set something up earlier on and then you call back to it later in the film to make it funnier. And what he does earlier in the film, his father made a comment about saying that how if they were in Pakistan, he would basically be, you know, in some shitty factory or dead somewhere. So he actually spends loads, hundreds of thousands of dollars to build a replica house and then ship him and his father to Pakistan.
As you would,
exactly. You know, to sort of show, sort of, again, because he's trying to teach his father a moral lesson and that kind of stuff. And it also gives him a chance to bond. And whilst they're there, they get captured by militants, and they're held for, I think it's something like 18 months, something like that. Meanwhile, his show has become a massive hit in America, despite the fact that, you know, he's not been there to write it or really have any input, but apparently, you know, enough time has passed for it to become this huge, successful blockbuster hit. So when they finally get saved and brought back, they're sort of welcomed as heroes. But while it's nice, because right before that happens, there's this little scene where him and Rip Torn have this conversation, basically saying the reason why he does all the stuff he does is because he just wants his father to be proud of him, and he learned to do things differently from his father. So, you know, there's like a nice little, there's a little nugget of a moral, and there's some character development, you could say. Plus, there's also a really funny bit where, which in turn is another callback. And in fact, it's great, because not only is it a callback, it's also another thing in comedy, which is called a capper, which is basically where you not only call back to something, you then escalate, you up the stakes as well to make it funnier, so it builds off the original callback. So at the beginning of the film, within the first 8 minutes of the film, he's driving along and he finds a horse. A stud farm. There's a hilarious scene where he basically leaps out of his car for no reason, runs over, grabs the horse's erect penis, real horse penis, by the way, real erect horse penis, which you actually see becoming more turgid on the screen, and proceeds to masturbate the horse for a while. He then does the same in Pakistan with an elephant, but obviously it's funnier because it's an elephant, and also it's even funnier because he makes the elephant come and it sprays all over Rip Torn and just coats him in white, which is, you know, it's good. It's a well-constructed bit of comedy. You know, it's a callback and a capper. And then the film, yeah, pretty much ends shortly after that.
Eventually.
Oh, and he gets his son sent to, he also tells, people, his young brother is 25 years old. He also managed to convince the federal government that a 25-year-old was, in the film's own parlance, fingered by his father, and so therefore is sent to home for abused children.
Yeah, his brother's name is Freddy, isn't it?
And Freddy, hence, he's the titular character.
So the way I'm gonna score this is, I'm basically gonna, whoever makes me, and obviously I've had to watch the film again to ask these questions, but whoever makes me want to either watch the film or not watch the film is gonna get a point, for each question I ask. So Alex, I'm now gonna ask you to describe the film, for me in your own words, but you do have the easier job here, so I'm gonna make it a little bit harder for you, and you're only allowed to describe it in 3 words.
Shitty bestiality film.
I'm going to give you both a point.
Why so?
Alex, you pretty much nailed it on the head there, but Sam, you were very enthusiastic.
Well, it's an upbeat movie, you know.
It is, absolutely.
It has a lot of energy. Tom Green has a lot of energy.
Maybe my three summary words don't cover the entire film, but I think, you know, that's the spirit of it.
Yeah.
There is a lot of animal-based humor in the film, shall we say?
Yeah, you've both got a point for that one, but I shan't be so polite for the rest of my few questions. Okay, Alex. Mm. What was your favourite scene in the film?
Oh my god. Oh, it's impossible to choose because there wasn't anything in the film that I even remotely enjoyed.
Okay, so what was your least favourite scene, and obviously why?
How to fucking choose? I mean, there's a scene early on in the sandwich factory, and this is by no means the worst thing in the film, but it's one that's just come to mind where what's his name in the film again?
Gordo.
Gordo.
Gordo, yeah.
It might be Gordy. I think it might Gordy. Be Gordy, but Gordo. Gordy.
Gordy. Gordy's working in the cheese sandwich factory, and, you know, he's getting a little bored. So, you know, what does he do? He just grabs a massive sausage that happens to be hanging nearby and holds it to his crotch and just sits on the conveyor belt, waggling it around and letting it hit all the venerable old ladies who are working on the sandwiches. So, yeah, I think...
Now, he also says that he's a sexy boy, and that's, you know, that's enhancing the comedy.
I'm not sure how you feel that enhances it, but...
Well, it's more. It's just more things, isn't it?
Each to their own, I suppose. I mean, some films, you know, do find it hilarious, the height of comedy, to have an older character and sexualize them. And then, and this does do that later on, but it's the fact that all the poor little old ladies just clearly aren't enjoying it, poor dears. You know, they're just trying to get on with their job. They're just trying to make these cheese sandwiches for all the people on their lunch breaks. But no, hit round the head with fucking salami penis.
Okay, and Sam, what was your favourite scene in the film then, and of course why?
Oh, there are so many.
There are, aren't there? I'll tell you mine. I love the scene. I actually genuinely do like the scene where he ties sausages to his fingers and plays the piano and asks, Daddy, would you like some sausages? Daddy, would you like some sausages?
Don't sell the scene short. He then proceeds to say that same thing for about 18 minutes.
He does.
It's almost as funny as Backwards Man.
It's a bit like the classic Family Guy joke, you know, where it's like they do something that's funny at first, and then they keep doing it, and it stops being funny, but they keep doing it long enough, and it becomes funny again. And I would argue that he has mastered that technique of doing jokes that are really long.
I think he pioneered.
And most of his jokes are, you know, he does the clever thing of just his main sort of joke, in order to keep the joke going, is to just keep repeating it over and over again.
So and I think that's clever. What was your favourite scene?
My favourite scene would have to be, quite probably, the opening, actually, where he's skateboarding through the shopping centre.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've got him on the skateboard, and you've got, what I love is, it's a perfect time capsule of that period in sort of Americana and American pop culture, that sort of late, you know, sort of end of the, sort of, you know, the millennium sort of time. And, you know, where again it was, you know, like sort of the early Buffy era, and again sort of the birth of kind of the modern college sort of pop music and pop movie. And you have, you know, so he's got all the classic stuff on there. He's got, you know, he's got the undershirt, he's got the Hanes undershirt on, he's got the long sleeve overshirt. He's, you know, he's skateboarding around. He's, you know, he's displaying skateboarding stuff.
And skateboarding douchebags.
Exactly. And but it's great because not just that, but then you've got like the constant as he's skateboarding through the mall and doing all these little tricks and avoiding people. You've got the physical comedy of, you know, the wacky guard chasing after him, you know, because he's a no good kid, who's 29 years old, and he's, you know, so you've got the great physical comedy of like knocking over an old person and whilst another things like that, but then you've got and him slamming into the door, which again is just really fresh comedy. But also what I love is that the editing of the camera work. You've got the constant sort of the cut pans and the slow mo shots, and it's great because again it's a nice little time capsule, and it really just feels like MTV never changed, you know. It was like reliving the glory days of Green Day all over again.
No, Alex, do you have anything to offer there?
No, I guess, you know, I always thought a little highly of Tony Hawk for his skateboarding and you know, his don't do drugs, kids, but you can have fun attitude. But now,
and his long sleeve undershirts.
But seeing what skateboarding is encouraged, I have to withdraw any residual affection.
But Alex, don't you want your MTV? That film gave you your MTV.
Have you seen MTV these days?
That's what I'm talking about. But it's not MTV these days. It's talking about when MTV used to play music. And again, it's a great little time capsule where it's like, again, when MTV was music television. It was so refreshing. I was refreshed.
Okay, I'm going to give Sam the point for that one. It was a very coherent argument, very well thought out. It's funny you both mentioned animals.
Well, animals, the scenes involving animals in that film are very funny. Universally.
So you laughed out loud at the point where he smiled with abandon. And draped its flesh over his skin and danced around. And then hit by a truck. I enjoyed the part where he got hit by a truck.
Now, sadly, I do have to say, one of the funniest scenes in Drawn Together that Alex, you and I watched was when... you know what I'm going to say?
Yes, but that's somewhat different, you know. That Waldor Sockbat is trying to do the right thing and but not for himself. You know, he's trying to do the right thing for an innocent family. Mm. And he does.
Their youth will be our youth bit.
No, this is the, tell my wife and kids I love them. I did what any good Christian would do. I gutted the dead trucker and wore his skin as a suit. I love you, honey. I love you, kids. Sweetheart, we've been so worried. Where are the birds?
Right. Going back to the film. Actually, you point to Alex about sort of that scene in particular and whatnot. That is actually kind of is related to my main positive point about film in general overall.
Oh yeah.
That's fine. So, Sam, you can say you're the most positive point about the film. Alex, I'd like you to argue against it, and then Alex, I'd like you to tell us the worst bit about the film, and then obviously Sam, you can argue against it, and whoever I think has had the most coherent argument, again, as I say, will get the point. Bearing in mind,
Sam's a very coherent person. Anyone who's listened to the podcast before knows that I stutter and mumble my way through every fucking line.
No, it's okay. You can stutter and mumble so long as you've got the content to back it up.
Lather on.
Okay. So, Sam, I'd like you to tell me what the best thing about this film was.
Okay, the best thing about this film, and again, this covers in time. What the one thing that's really great about this film is the fact that it's very much a product of it's an almost an auteur thing. It's so much a product of Tom Green, and I like the fact that all the way through the film, it keeps up its intensity. Like it never sort of dips. It never sort of, you know, so you've got, like, again, it sort of sets up the bar quite high with the style and the type of comedy and content that you're going to find in the film, and it doesn't drop. It keeps that energy all the way through, you know, and it keeps it going, and it ramps up things like that. But again, it's just so singularly his vision, and it's kind of impressive, just again considering some of the extremes the film goes into. I mean, obviously, you know, at the time he had a bit of star power backing him, but and a bit of that credibility, but just the fact that all the way through the film it was very clearly a case where the studio, and this was, bear in mind, this is a film put out by 20th Century Fox, people known to be fairly grubby and to show the thumbprints on their films, but they just let the guy go to town. And, you know, that's something you never really see. And again, you know, he wrote it, he directed it, and they very clearly said, okay, we have the confidence in you, we trust you with this project, just go play. And that shows all the way through the film. And that's kind of an impressive thing, purely because, you know, regardless of what you may think wrongly about the overall result, that itself is a very impressive feat in the art of cinema, to have that level of sort of control and access, and also just having a studio just say, yes, we will fund you, we will support you, and, you know, in especially like in today's climate where everything has to have a pre-existing audience, everything has to be micromanaged, and everything has to fit into a larger money merchandise driven and franchise driven design, it is so rare and so refreshing to go back to a time and find a film like this where, you know, a big, this wasn't a release as an indie thing, this was a big major release in 2001, and the studio just said, yes, we trust you, we're not going to hand you with kid gloves, we will let you go to the places you want to go. That is refreshing. Also, it has to be said, I have never, ever, ever, ever seen a bad Rip Torn performance, partially because the difference between a good Rip Torn performance and a bad Rip Torn performance is completely indistinguishable, but still, Rip Torn's on the screen, you're always having fun. And he's clearly always having fun. Now, so there you go. Those are good points.
T- to your point about it being wonderful, but the studio didn't micromanage it, and it was very much his own vision. I would argue the counterpoint that it has ruined so many films that could have been fantastic had they not been micromanaged. But this is the example of why micromanagement is needed. Because it's so fucking dreadful that someone should have stepped in and said, no! Stop what you're fucking doing! If this had been micromanaged, and another film hadn't been, if there'd been a fantastic film, you know, people go on and on about, what's the fucking film? Blade Runner. About how amazing, you know, it was, and how it was ruined by test screenings and the studio getting involved. What if a studio had given that film the chance to shine? Then studios all over the place would have had more confidence for that sort of thing. But it's films like this that withdraw that confidence. It's films like this that mean these days you don't see that sort of thing so much.
But you can't dictate what art can and cannot be controlled. You can't put a pin in creativity. You can't ultimately say, oh, you know, you can't do that. You can't put that. You can't just erect those boundaries. It's like with science. People always scoff when they say, like, ooh, scientists have discovered that, you know, something that's considered fairly common knowledge and fairly, you know, fairly obvious. Or things like, okay, things like the dogs having a sense of internal magnetism. People say, oh, well, that's, you know, like how, you know, there's that study repeat where basically when dogs defecate, they essentially align themselves to true north, to true magnetic north. And people scoff at it, saying, well, that's nonsense. That doesn't help anyone. But the thing is, though, science is going out to prove things, but ultimately you can't dictate what avenues you can and can't go down.
This is what I'm ultimately driving at,
is that you can't dictate that kind of creativity. And things like, again, regardless of what your final opinion on the final product, that creativity.
But that's what we're talking about here. So we're talking about the final product.
Risk, and those risks. And this was clearly a risky thing that could have, you know, they could have very easily seen this, said, no, we're cutting this, we're removing that.
And they should have. That's what they should have done.
The thing is, though, but they should things like this prove, because ultimately this film did become successful. I mean, yeah, it didn't do well at the box office, but, you know, it became a massive success on DVD and became a big cult hit, and it has had an enduring appeal. And you can't control that. You can't dictate. Yes, you might release something that doesn't do well at first, but again, look at Firefly. Firefly didn't do well.
Oh my god.
And then Firefly became popular. And yes, you could argue that with Firefly, ultimately, what people love about it isn't what it is what it would have been had it, or what it could have been when it, if had it, had it continued going. And that's the honest, hard honest truth about Firefly. But again, you have to just let these avenues take course. You have to let these little odd things happen. You have to let these little offshoots happen. Regardless of, you shouldn't, yes, feel free to dislike the film. But don't dislike the intent. It's the whole thing of, you know, I may disagree with what you say, but I'll fight to the death for your right to say it. And that's what it is. You know, this is a piece of film. It is pure self-expression. It is Tom Green putting his mark down saying, these are the things I'd like, regardless of your personal feelings on my style of comedy, regardless of your feelings on the content. This is me putting down my stamp, being allowed, unfettered to do that. And I think that kind of thinking, regardless of the final product, in some ways should be applauded.
Well,
also, there's a bit where he wanks off a horse.
Alex,
see,
why?
I'd say, you know, the point against the horse wanking off, you know, being from an agricultural background.
So am
not
I.
Not necessarily horses, but a lot of animals, you know, they need to be wanked off, and it's not cool to make fun of that, you know. A lot of farmers have to do that a lot of the time. A lot of farmers sit there all day wanking off animals, and for this movie to just come along, and for this movie to come along and just say that their job is a joke, no, that's not cool. I'm sorry.
That's the thing. Are they saying it's a joke, or are they saying, because again, the interesting thing about this film is watching it, I'm never quite sure.
No. In that scene, he sees that the farmers are about to, you know, retrieve the sperm from this horse, and he screeches his car to a stop, jumps over the fence, grabs the horse's penis to make fun of them. You know, he stands around them and says, "What you're doing is stupid. Look at me. I'm a farmer." this but is so stupid. And it's not stupid, it's important, and it's necessary for the agricultural community. Do you like eating? Do you like to have something to eat on your plate? Well, then stop pissing off farmers.
Well, I was a vegetarian for 7 years, so you know. But
because farmers don't grow crops or anything.
No, but you know, I live in a family with chickens. We're pretty much self-sufficient. What I was going to say was, in that instance, ask yourself this, watching the film as a whole, are you meant to support him or not? Because all the way through the film, it's never quite clear whether you're meant to be on his side. He is very much shown to be incompetent and idiot, and people around him, you know, act in an over-the-top cartoonish manner, but they're ultimately just reacting to his own character. And again, if you actually watch that film, through the lens of you're not meant to root for Gordo, you're not meant to like him, he is meant to be a buffoon to be laughed at, then that scene becomes more about him. You're laughing at him and his own stupidity rather than you are laughing about the horse being wanked off.
I would disagree that was the film.
Also, how often will the average American, especially like urban audience, be made aware of the fact that horses get wanked off? Sometimes these issues need to be brought to light, and in some ways,
you have to check their internet history before you.
You know,
2001, dial up.
They covered it in Malcolm in the Middle, so that's fine.
Alex,
I said urban America, not middle America.
Okay, Alex, would you say that the horse being wanked off was the worst thing in the film, or would you go with something else then?
I've harped on about the abuse of animals in this film,
I didn't actually stick around for the credits. So was there a thing at the end saying that no animals were harmed in the making of this film?
I wasn't watching the credits carefully enough.
I assume there has to have been, because otherwise
I assume there probably was. Even if it's a lie, studios have to put that in. To get the film made.
Well, no, I imagine with the amount of animals and animal-related stuff, they would have had handlers and wranglers, so I imagine, you know, these animals are being taken care of.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Well,
quite literally in the scene where he, you know, wanks it off.
Yeah, well, I'm going to stop harping on about the animal abuse, because I think we've covered that well enough.
So what was the worst thing about the film?
I'm going to look at a different kind of abuse, which is... abuse against newborn children. There's a scene.
Alex, that scene is a great example. example of
Sam, please, can I finish? Can I finish? I'm sorry, Sam, can I finish? I will just describe the scene briefly for those at home who haven't seen the film. Gordy goes to hospital to see his friend, whose leg was broken on his stupid skateboard ramp. And, in the bed next to his friend, there's a pregnant woman. And, Gordy disturbs her and, pisses her off so much that it agitates her and puts her into labor. And, he then forcibly spreads her legs and dives his hand on in, which is pretty much sexual assault. and then after the baby has been born, he doesn't cut the umbilical cord. He bites it off. And as an aside, saves a piece for later. Then, when it's found that the baby doesn't seem to be breathing, rather than giving the baby the customary slap on the backside to shock it into breathing, no, Gordy swings it around and around his head via its umbilical cord. This horrific scene is justified by the baby then starting to cry and breathe. Everyone is showered with blood, including the mother and everyone else in the hospital room. And he is quite rightly escorted from the premises, but yelling about the fact that he's a hero and has saved this baby and this mother. And I just found it so heart-wrenchingly unfunny and horrible that I don't think anything else in the film, even the giant elephant penis... spraying his father with jizz, didn't quite manage to top the swinging a baby around by its still attached umbilical cord.
And Sam, what do you have to? How do you retort this?
I'm looking forward to this because I know he's got a comeback.
First of all, people always say, oh, you know, you shouldn't make jokes about that kind of thing, and you shouldn't make that kind of jokes. But first of all, it's a very important thing to distinguish. People complain about dead baby jokes. That scene clearly shows the baby's not dead, so it's fine. There you go. It ultimately shows that the baby is ultimately unharmed.
Oh, God.
So you can't have that moral hand-wringing of, oh, it's making fun of a dead baby. No, it's not. It's just,
baby might be alive, but I point out that that baby's arms and legs might be broken.
It's young. Milk is good for them. The mother's milk helps. Also, babies are incredibly incredibly spongy at that age. Another thing is, the film goes out of its way to show that the baby's ultimately fine. I think it's one of those little things where it's like, you know, but birth is a trying and stressful experience, like a lot of things, and you know, and a lot of good humor pokes fun at the foibles and the kind of the inherent absurdities of certain things. And you know, a lot of people would argue that the birthing process is inherently absurd, and so why not just max that up to 11 and just make it silly? And that's what the film does. It takes an idea, it maxes it up to 11 because again, it tries to push sort of boundaries. And the great thing about one that is when you push boundaries, you get to see where. You know, what makes a good joke? The more you try to sort of expand on a joke, the better you're able to see where the joke is at its funniest and works the most. And again, it goes back to that thing of the fact that the film keeps up its tone. It doesn't just go, oh, a lot of films go, okay, yeah, we'll have our silly gross out moment here, but oh, look, we've got to have the serious moment here. We can't touch us. This is sacred. It goes, no, the film's very, subversive that way. It's happy to go, well, yes, this film, many would consider this a taboo or perfectly safe situation. But no, we're happy to go there because, you know, it's free and unfettered expression. And again, the prop from the baby was very well done. As a big horror and 80s gore fan myself, I always find it entertaining to see women with tambourines getting splattered with blood from across the room. it's a scene because it's showing the film commits, and a lot of films don't do that.
Okay, I've heard both of your points. I'm gonna give Alex the point for this one. Because no matter how far you dug down, then you couldn't quite get past the dead baby. So it is now 2-2. So, gentlemen, I'd like you to deliver your closing argument. This is all or nothing now. So, Sam, if you'd like to go, and I want you to tell me why I should watch this film. Pretend I haven't ever seen this film.
Okay, you should watch this film. You should watch this film because it's a great example of an important issue in the wider context of cinema as an art. It's a film all about free expression. It's a film where the writer and the director has a complete chance to just do whatever he wants and go absolutely mad with it and just funnel his own sensibility to the film. And again, that's incredibly rare. And again, like I said before, it's a fantastic answer these days where films are so controlled and so by the numbers and so by committee and so annualized and franchised. It's just nice to see something that has plenty of the rough edges. It's nice to see something that, yes, okay, it might always make the best decision or it might stumble a few times, but at least it's trying and there is a genuine kind of earnestness to the film. It's not a cynical film in many ways. It's ultimately a fictionalized of his own sort of personal and, you know, professional journey, and it's showing that idea of, you know, especially has a great moral of, you know, the young guy does good. Ultimately, he succeeds. He does, you know, he figures out through these various situations. He figures out and develops a greater understanding of his own personal art, and it shows him evolving as a person that way, and it allows him to see at the end of it he's put the effort in, he's gone through the various situations, and he's learned and he's gained the experience needed in order to, you know, to make his art better and to make himself a better person. You know, at the end of the film he has that little scene with Rip Torn, and again it's a nice little moment where he goes, you know, it's a genuine little moment. Again, there's no cynicism, there's no earnestness, and in many ways, it's kind of like a play where everyone's emotions are very much heightened to the fore, and they just does a really good job of just, you know, allowing people to express themselves, and again, just showing how these situations, and again, it does the smart thing of it takes a situation and it blows it up into mass, major, really operatic proportions to sort of show you the sort of the emotional crux of it, like the scene where Rip Torn comes in, ridicules him during the day, and then proceeds to trash the restaurant, and the little boy gets horrifically injured on his birthday. And again, it does things like that. It has little running jokes of that, like the boy smashing his face into the side of the car and being covered with blood. Then you see him again, and you know he's got a big bruise. He's fine, and then does the cartoon thing of at the very end, he very clearly gets horrifically maimed, but it's and the blood splatters all over the crowd, but it's fine because he's okay. So again, you know, it's a film that is very willing to have its own cake and eat it, and many films just don't have that. Also, there's a horse getting wanked off.
Okay, and
you're not going to find that in Iron Man.
Well, this is true. And Alex, if you could deliver your closing argument as to why I shouldn't watch this film.
Look, any lessons or, you know, positive messages you want to have about the film industry from this film, you could find other better examples than this. You know, go find an independent film that made it big and look at that for inspiration. This film is so bad that only the someone with the strongest constitution for intoxicating substances would be able to ingest the amount of hallucinogenics it would require to make this film funny or entertaining. It's just awful.
Okay. I have chosen a winner. One of you has 3 points, one of you has 2 points, but first, Sam, I'd like to know what you really thought of the film.
Okay, this film, if memory serves, it is 72 minutes and 54 seconds long. I memorized that because that's how much of my life this fucking film drained away. Oh my god, thing is, I was watching this film, and the only way I could get through it was not only because I was watching, I had to play my DS. I had to play my 2DS at the same time. I literally watched this film with one ear and one eye on it, and even then, that was too fucking much. Oh my god. And like I said, okay, do you know why I made a point about the whole thing about the first 8 minutes? Because in the first 8 minutes, you have, let's see, yeah, you have the horse getting wanked off, you have him running over a deer, slicing it open and wearing it, then getting hit by a truck. You have just, this unrelentless fucking stream of nonsense. And again, every single fucking scene, it's this. Here's the scene, here's the big set piece of escalation. But between that, the run-up is always the same. It's just him saying the same five words over and 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 over again.
He said Jiminy Jilligan so many times, the words have lost all meaning.
Exactly. And the thing is, okay, Tom Green was popular with stoners and college age as a kid because, again, at the time, you know, it was sort of that sort of just post South Park become big, and that kind of shock and that really crude sort of post millennial humor was big. And obviously, him leading that charge of that new sort of new wave of millennial fucking comedians that were only popular then because people liked fucking Encino Man and that shite. And just, it's just, God, there's a reason why you never hear from this guy again. He is one, it's not even a single fucking note. It's half a note. It's a fucking farce, and it's just over and over again. And it's just, and Rip Torn, what are you doing in this film? And I know that you have this kind of, you know, you have this kind of, this persona of being sort of bluff and blah and very loud, but it's just, no one in this film is utilized well. No one is put towards their strength. Every single joke, it's the laziest thing whatsoever. And again, it's just vile. I mean, yeah, things like you got jokes about ultimately halfway through the film he just molests a horse. Not in the first 8 minutes he molests a horse. They just present, you know, children being child abuse and people have to deal with that as a running joke. And again, just it's not even like, oh, it's so absurd and silly. And that's the thing, if it was like it tries to sort of push boundaries, but it's not even absurd enough to be funny. It's just, oh, it's just the laziest, most tired, oh look, here's a guy falling over, oh, it's funny to show an injury. Oh, and that's the thing, that's how every situation escalates. It's literally just, I'm going to come in, I'm going to keep saying the same words over and over again, that people will get louder, and the scene will probably end long after someone gets hurt, because again, it's funny, not only is it funny to see it hurt, but then it's funny to spend 10 fucking minutes pointing out the fact that someone was hurt. And it's just, it's the longest fucking film I've ever seen in my life. This is worse than Avatar. I just felt my life draining away. There were points where I literally just wanted to start skipping or actually go on YouTube and just find the, in heavy inverted commas, best bits. Clips.
I had the same thing. Oh. I was slightly prepared for this film in that I knew it was going to be such a drain of my life, in that, well, I waited until I was ready to go to sleep. Then I forced myself to stay awake to watch.
I'd seen it before as a kid.
So the hours of my life I was losing were ones I wouldn't spend
asleep. I'd seen it before as a kid, and the thing is, I only remember it being bad. Even as a kid, I just remember it being bad and just being unfunny. And that's the thing. No, there is no pacing. There is no setup of jokes. It's literally just, he just explodes into a room and yells, "Here is a joke!" And then just basically, again, the rest of the scene just plays out like a long, wet fart afterwards. And okay, this film, culturally, intellectually, if you actually like comedy, then this film is the enemy. Because this film is the enemy of comedy. This film is emotionally fucking vapid. It's completely pointless. It exists purely because Tom Green wanted it to exist and no one else did. And at some point, Fox clearly said, well, Tom Green seems to make money, so we'll give him some money to make a film and make us more money. It exists. It only exists because, and he would have only ever been given the shot he had because at the time, for that one fucking minuscule iota, that one microsecond he was a presence in the pop culture landscape, and just people thought, fuck it, we've got to try and make some money of this whilst we can. It's fucking emotionally damaging. It's reprehensible on so many levels. It's culturally vapid and it's desolate. It's just, there is nothing redeeming about this film. It is a blemish on pop culture. It is rightfully forgotten, and the only people who don't want it forgotten are the people like us who just want to talk about how bad it was and point at it and say, if you ever want to lower your standards, you have to go below that.
I'm quite sad.
This film actually may be at times angrier than Last Airbender did. I'm quite sad that I chose
for you to defend the film now, because I enjoyed that so much.
There is genuinely, and I've tried, God, honestly, I've tried, there is genuinely nothing. I mean, you know what I said before? That is bullshit. Freedom of expression, but at the same time, just because you're allowed to say something doesn't mean it's worth saying. There is nothing redeeming about this film. It is a cultural, intellectual, emotional void from which there is no escape. If you honestly come out of this film having enjoyed yourself, you are subnormal.
I think there was one, having thought about it just now, there is one instance, one small instance of humour in that film that I went, hmm.
There is one joke approaching subtlety.
I don't know if it'd be the same one for you. It was right at the end.
Was it the Eiffel Tower bit?
No. It was right at the end when, after Gordy and his father get kidnapped and then they're finally rescued and come back to the USA and they've got big long beards and long hair. And it cuts to a scene of Freddy in this clinic with all these other abused kids. For some reason, he's got a long beard and long hair as well.
The closest thing I found to a subtle joke in that film was the bit where his girlfriend, who is obsessed with just giving him blowjobs, it's the bit where she first gives him a blowjob and it cuts away and there's a picture of the Eiffel Tower on the wall, and the joke is, oh look, here's the, and you know, it's the Eiffel Tower under construction, and basically the joke is, oh look, it's he's getting erection. That's the joke, and that's the closest thing the film comes to subtle. But there is just nothing redeeming about this film.
Yeah, I know.
At all. It is utterly, utterly reprehensible on every conceivable level. It's not even like offensive in a shocking manner. It's just offensive in terms of actual art and cinema and taste. The content isn't shocking. What's shocking is that they allowed it to be made. Ugh.
Now I have your final opinion. I do have one more thing I'll ask you both. And you can be as brutally honest with this as you want. Let's say, in a hypothetical world, you have to make a sequel to this film. What would happen now? Obviously, you're not going to have an idea straight off the back of your head, so I'm going to tell you what my idea for a sequel is. And I've prepared one, and then if you, you know, when you're ready, you can deliver that. So, my idea for a sequel would be, so he's got this, he's got his TV show with the zebras in America, and it's sort of almost a parody of the first film, if that were such a thing, if that could be such a thing, in that now Gordy is told that they're going to make a movie of the series, and then so it'll go through the process of him trying to regain creative control from
Control.
The fat one from The Hangover. That's the best way. I can't. Zach.
He's genuinely funny.
Yeah, sometimes he is. And other times he's painfully unfunny.
I think you'll find, sir, that it's Felix. It's Felix. It's Felix. It's Felix.
So it would be him who would have the creative control, and so Gordy would be trying to get it back. And along the way, Rebel Wilson and Melissa McCarthy would come in and help him out, because why the fuck not?
I object to this film purely because some of those people have genuine, if not talent, approaching talent, and even people who have approaching being talented don't deserve that fate.
Neither did Rip Torn.
This is true. But like this, I said, yeah. At least with Rip Torn you can enjoy it because, again, you can't tell a good Rip Torn performance from a bad one.
Yeah, true.
Fuck it.
So what sequel ideas would you go with?
My sequel idea would be 45 minutes of him being forced, possibly even strapped down, to just stare into camera. He's not allowed to turn away. He's not allowed to stop. Someone will be there with eye drops. He's not allowed to turn away. He's not allowed to not look into the camera. He's also some sort of apparatus designed to sort of to measure the decibel volume of his voice. And if he exceeds a certain threshold, he will be painfully harmed with knives. And he basically just has to apologize, and it has to be a sincere apology that someone has actually sat, an actual writer has sat down and written for him. But yeah, I want to see him. I want to see him for 45 minutes being forcefully emotionally degrading in front of the camera.
So, like, the exact feeling that the audience got when they watched.
Yeah, I want him to suffer the fate of having seen that film.
Okay. And Alex, have you got any sequel ideas that you'd like?
I've got an idea. It's similar to Sam's, in that, but in my idea, we aren't going to have Tom Green at all. It's going to be it's going to be a very serious film that focuses on his brother Freddy, and basically it's going to be a very serious sort of, to look at it, you know, it's an independent type film, but you know, maybe it's a big budget, who knows, but it's played by Eddie Kane Thomas, and it's him going through the therapy of being someone whose life has been ruined by someone else being completely ridiculous and stupid, but not only that, but everyone validating this person.
So in other words, you want to see the Frank Grimes movie.
So I, you know, Eddie Kane, you know, represents the audience who have seen Freddy Got Fingered, and it's a way to, by the end of the film, it's a way to realize that, you know, life can go on, and you can choose not to look at these things. You can choose not to see Freddy Got Fingered, or not to let it control your life. You can live on and be free of it.
Eat, okay. Pray, leave.
Okay, we do have a winner. Simply because you've spouted so much bullshit that... Honest to God, I nearly started believing you, and had I not seen the film,
I genuinely convinced you, I would have passed the psychopath test.
So yeah, Sam, I'm gonna say that you're our winner of today's clusterfuck. No, clusterfuck.
Get the branding right.
Fuck. Beat that out.
I was right genuinely there. Not expecting to Looper win. Right I've there. Not actually. I mean, I'm delighted that I've won. You know, the trophy will look fantastic on the mantle.
Well,
it's
yeah.
Just a big, it's just a big. You know, gold plated puckered anus.
Yeah.
but it'll look great. Very tasteful. I've not actually prepared a film. I've not actually thought of a bad film for you guys to be tortured with. But
Why don't you research one now while we talk about our Star Wars ideas then?
Yeah. Okay, so let's come up with some more Star Wars.
Let's who are our main targets for these rumors? You know, who's going to pay us the big bucks?
Okay, so rumors? We're going to have to go big, sort of big reviews. So Perez Hilton, because I'd just like to have his money. I think I'd do better with it. Let's say ISIS, Al-Qaeda, they probably like Star Wars. They don't like anything else, so they've got to like something.
You know, I think what we've got to do is go to the smaller companies that have nothing to do with the film reviews, but by dint of they'll pay more for these rumors because, you know, if they have them, then all this interest is suddenly going to come to their small business that no one gives a fuck about.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know,
I like that
have,
idea.
You have, I think.
So, Alex, are you saying that we should leak these rumors to ourselves?
I have no idea what you're talking about. But I think, like, you know, you see on app stores all these apps which are clones of the real thing. Things like dating apps that have joined the game a bit too late.
Yeah.
I think those are the guys we really want to go after with this.
See, I would also say that go for Daily Mail, but like those would be the ones that we'd sell the really ridiculous rumours to. So when they publish them, if they turned out to be right, they've got the money to pay for the rumours anyway. But if they turn out to be wrong, it's just really funny that the Daily Mail have got something else wrong. So
no, with the Daily Mail, I think we want the ones that are the most offensive, so that they
they
have something to rail about. So that
Jedi's are Muslims.
Yeah, look at what being a nerd is doing to your child. You know.
Yeah.
Like, I found my film. I found the film, guys.
Oh, okay. Here we go.
Howard the Duck.
Oh fuck you. Yeah.
Boom! It's happening.
Yeah. Just a moment of silence, angry silence.
Just put down the razor, Tom.
See, God damn it! I already know what my next film, if I win, is going to be. went easy on both of you with Freddy.
But well, then you better fucking dazzle me.
Oh God!
your groans are just validation enough for me right now. Just yes, to me this is saying that I'm on the right track. Yeah. Howard the Duck.
Does this mean that you have to watch the film?
It does mean that I do have to watch Howard the Duck. Yes.
Okay. Cool. Then at least we're not alone.
Oh dear.
Okay. I've lost all enthusiasm for Star Wars rumors.
Well, okay. I did have a runner-up, but I kind of want to do Howard the Duck.
No, we'll do
Howard the Duck. Yeah, we'll do it. It's bad movies for a reason.
You can't give people an easy ride on bad movies.
Mm. Okay, Howard the Duck. Do we have any more Star Wars rumors before we? And Sam, that does mean that you're going to have to come up with a money-making idea for the podcast for next week.
Okay, I can do this. I can definitely I can mind shower some things, as we are now forced mm-hmm. to say.
Is that okay?
Yep.
I never. Oh my god.
Yep. Can't say.
Mind shower.
Can't say. Brainstorm.
That's just molesting away from being cancelled as well. That's just nah. That won't last. Yeah. I'll see to it.
Okay. Well, let's have one more fake Star Wars pitch.
Okay.
From each of us.
Ooh, okay. Luke Skywalker had a secret love child with a Wookiee. And Chewbacca won't actually appear in the film. It just looks like Chewbacca. It's actually going to be Luke's love child with Chewbacca's sister. Played by...
Shaquille O'Neal,
because he was in Freddy Got Fingered, and so he hasn't done anything else with his career. So he's going cheap.
Okay, how about... Turns out, Jar Jar Binks.
Oh God!
You think it's bad, but we're going to hook the fans back in. Turns out, Jar Jar Binks was an immortal.
What are you doing?
But But
you're getting the fans of Star Trek involved, yeah. But I don't know how it's Star Wars.
But
you do know there's two different franchises.
But he at the beginning of episode 7, he's killed. You know, he's immortal, not invincible.
You just said he's immortal.
He's immortal, not invincible. Yeah,
like the Highlander, and there can be only one.
There can only be one Jar Jar.
Right. And so, you know, you think it's going to be a Jar Jar movie. No, he's dead. But the rest of the movie is about solving his murder.
Oh, God. I'd like to go off of that. Oh, God, no, you're making a TV spin-off made by fucking Cartoon Network. I'd like to go off from that, actually. I'd like to see the film. I'd like to see a crossover between the Greek god Prometheus, the undying god who was trained to a mountain and his guts were pecked out and then regrew the next day, with that film that you just mentioned, Alex. I'd like to see Jar Jar die and then he'd wake up the next day in complete agony. And so he would never know who kept doing this. And so it's not just about finding his murderer, but it's also stopping the guy from doing it again because he keeps fucking doing it. And we can bring in the idea. This is great. We can bring in my Qui-Gon Jinn idea, in that Qui-Gon Jinn has come back from the dead using the Muslim force, because, as I say, all Jedis are Muslim. And so Allah has brought him back to right the wrongs that he's done by introducing Jar Jar to the world. So Qui-Gon Jinn, although a Sith, because he has the powers of darkness and hurting people, he is, you know, he's essentially the next prophet.
Climb to the shrine to right what is wrong, and the world will be healed by the Guardian song.
I just got this image of kind of like Jar Jar, like you'll get a cut of Jar Jar during, you know, his brief foray into the afterlife. It's like this, it's like Sisyphus pushing the rock up the hill, but he's having to roll Boss Nass up the hill, and then he rolls down again, going.
Just get better and better.
And then it's great because then you can put Brian Blessed in the film.
Good.
Okay. Sam, do you have any Star Wars rumors? Any more we can go for before we?
I hear a rumor that the lightsaber will have even more blades coming out of it. It will, there'll be a scene where it's essentially like he's in the ship after being bested, and maybe he's got a suit of armor on, because, you know, they're going the full blown knight or Templar style with him. His suit will be like, you know, kind of like the ones in like KOTOR, you know, where it's a big sort of hefty thing. And so he gets bashed around, and maybe he gets like zapped by lasers a few times, and like basically he gets damaged, and he gets sort of heat sealed into his armor, kind of like a big soup can. And so he gets back to the ship, you know, and he pops open the lightsaber, and then he presses a second button, and and a little adjunct pops up the side, and like a little sickle shaped blade comes out, and he essentially uses it to can opener himself out of it. And then another little blade comes out, and he uses it to dig some stones out of his space horse's hooves.
See, I heard two other rumors.
That's just for the extended Blu-ray.
Yeah. See, I heard that there was going to be a lightsaber boomerang, and that the actual villain himself is a lightsaber.
I can see that. The hood comes off. He stomps through the forest. He does that sort of lunge forward. The blade comes out. The two other little blades comes out. The dolphin pops up the top. you hear another noise. His hood flies off and the blade shoots out the top. That was my biggest issue with that scene, was when the hilt came out, the first thing I thought of was Foxy's lightsaber. And I exploded. Because they did the exact same thing as a joke.
Yeah. Before we get started, Foxy pops the hood.
He was a little bit of force.
And it's thinking back, it's amazing when you think how many just how full of Star Wars references that show was.
It was.
More than anything else.
Yeah, to hell with, like, Family Guy and Robot Chicken.
It's the way Family Guy used to be before they did the specials, and now they can't do the Star Wars jokes anymore.
Right. Well, I think we've covered our bad movies.
We've flustered our cucks.
Yeah. I'm sure you're really looking forward to watching Howard the Fuck Duck. so I know I am.
A warning in advance, Alex. Seth Green does not voice Howard in this one.
Oh, that's a shame.
Is Star-Lord in it? Just say yes. Just say yes.
George Lucas. And he made the Star Wars.
Fortunately.
He also made Willow.
I genuinely like Willow.
What?
I genuinely enjoy it. It's not a good film, but I like Willow. It makes part of the perfect sort of 80s fantasy camp trifecta of you got Willow, you've got Princess Bride, and then you've got Labyrinth. Watch them together. They're a fantastic combo. And who doesn't love a villain being defeated by a guy pretending to do a trick with a pig?
Fantastic.
And also...
Fantastic combo now for only $9.95.
Yeah. I genuinely like Willow. I mean, and it's got Christian Slater in it, doing an English accent, for some reason. That's fun.
No. No.
No.
That right there, if ever I've heard
Sorry, Val Kilmer. Sorry, Val Kilmer, not Christian Slater, Val Kilmer.
That's even worse, you couldn't even remember who it was. But you've promised me Christian Slater, and now it's Val Kilmer.
And it was directed by Ron Howard.
Batman ever.
It was directed by Ron Howard, and he's done some pictures.
So's the Da Vinci Code.
That's what I'm talking about.
Pretty sure I don't want to watch that again. God.
You should watch Krull. Or Legend.
Right, we're watching Howard the Duck, and that's that.
Right, we're watching Howard the Duck. Thank
and then you
for
should
listening.
Watch Willow, and then you should watch Willow of your own free time just to see that it's fun.
No.
I didn't say good.
No,
it's very important.
No.
I didn't say good. I said fun.
No. Okay, there is a difference between good and fun, I suppose.
Like, yeah, it's like Lady Hawk. They're not good films, but they're fun films.
Okay, thanks for listening. We have been Flustercock. And we will be back next week with our reviews of Howard the Duck.
Okay, thanks, bye.